This is an interview with Mrs. Betty Woods, Mrs. Woods' maiden name was Taylor. The Taylor family was the first family to come to Bishop. Mrs. Woods' father was Mr. F.G. Bishop's chief land supervisor. The interview was conducted at Mrs. Woods' residence at 710 East Caesar in Kingsville on August 16, 1973. The interview was conducted by Olga Rubalcaba. Mrs. Woods speaks primarily about Mr. F.G. Bishop's personal life. The latter half of the tape deals with women's fashions during the time that Mrs. Woods was growing up in Bishop, Texas.
And my maiden name is Betty Woods. I knew the first family in Bishop. We've been there since we got there June 18, 1910. And my father's birthday, a junior year. And we lived there until 1918. That was a year.
And your father's occupation?
My father was general sales manager for S.G. Bishop, or the firm, formed as S.G. Bishop. You see, this is formed as the grain company. I don't know who financed Mr. Bishop. I don't know whether it was Eastern money or whether it was money within the state. But of course, he had the tree. He's the one that had the tree. And this land was leased. I think that it was 15,000 acres, or probably more now, because it's all about that. But it was released from the King Ranch. At one time it was all part of King Ranch. And I think I told this in my other case about how they tried it with they formed this town site. I mean, they tried it this town site to begin with. They laid it out. And the thing was, if they came over there, and before there was a house or anything built, they laid down the sidewalk. Sidewalk fell over that little town.
The sidewalks wooden or concrete?
Concrete.
Concrete?
Kind of good scale.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, very modern. And they had a, they had already planned for the waterworks. And I think I told this in the other about the wells, about the water that we had then. We had these artesian wells. It bubbled up out of the ground.
Did Mr. Bishop supervise the work? Was he always there?
Mr. Bishop was the he was a vision. He had this vision, and of course, he was witness to this laying out sand side and all this and the other. I'm sure somebody knew how to play sand side, but all that was done, though, but they had that much vision. Mm-hmm. And that was the sand side of this.
So he wasn't around then to plan. He was supervising.
It was put that off a minute.
Okay.
He saw a man, a promoter. He was promoting stuff. And he was working on the other fellow's money.
Oh.
And he was having this son.
Oh.
Having this son. And I think I told on the other case how he met my father, how my father met him in Crawford City.
Would you tell us again?
Well, my father was spending the winter in Crawford for his health. He had bad pneumonia the year before, and the doctor told him he would never try to go through another winter there. So he came down to Crawford. That fall, before the weather got bad, in our part of the country. And he stayed there, and he met Mr. S.C. Bishop there in Carson. And my father was a salesman, a real lineman, a trader, the gold trader back in those days. And relative, in fact, from that 1922 on until he died, he was a relative in Corpus. He had there. You see, that was his business.
Mm-hmm.
But when he went in with Mr. Bishop, in those days they called them landmen. They sold land, they sold farmland. And mainly all my father's life, that's what he dealt in. And Baba was an awful good salesman. And Mr. Bishop talked him into coming into this thing as the general sales manager for this farmland, you know. They want to sell this farmland. And so that's how we happened to come down here. Down here, my father stayed down here. He came, of course, he came back home. And still, we sold out. I mean, they sold out. They sold out our home and everything. But we moved down here. And as I said, the first time we down here.
Do you remember what Mr. Bishop looked like?
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell us?
Well, he was a very large man. I would say Mr. Bishop was 6 feet tall at least. A heavy, that man. Not fat. Not a fat man, but a heavy. Very heavy, that man. He had black hair, and he had dark brown eyes, and he had a nervous trick, I think. Yeah, he had a nervous trick, he was always dragging his foot tail. You know, pulling his foot tail out, of course, you know, kids can notice that. But he did it constantly, he would drag his foot tail. And I always thought that, you know, if older people don't realize what an impression they make on kids. But I always thought these two were full of business, so they must think he's a kid. Now his wife was just the opposite. She was still. The bishop still made a ministry bishop. And they had one daughter. She was, Annelle was a bachelor. Now, let me see. I was nine. I imagine Annelle was about 6 or 7. And it was different. But we played together. And the bishop brother holds. You're in bishop and it's still there. It's right west of the old bishop hotel. And it was it's just a very big house. I mean, it doesn't look like, you know, too much ground, but it was beautifully funny. The thing was beautifully done. I think the one thing I remember, especially in the fireplace they're living in, they had a big bear rug. On the floor and go to the fireplace, yeah. And the head on. Yeah, I remember that as a child. And another thing that I remember, you know, yeah, Annelle was the only daughter at that time. Later, when Annelle was about 10, the bishop had another daughter, she was born in the 10-year city. But, you know, I was from a large family. And we looked at Annelle as a, you know, violent rich girl. When they built this home, they built a beautiful place after the backyard. And of course, I got the bear, and I was going lucky to get one doll. You know, when you're over a big family, you get things. That people like that on a playhouse, honestly. You know, they have everything that you can think of in the way of a toy or a plaything and dolls and beautiful things. They didn't spend money for any life.
Were they always wealthy?
Oh, no. No, I think there was a time when poor Mr. Bishop, you know, got into this, and, before he got way back in the young American days, I think Sarah rose to the market just like a lot of women. And, you know, she was quite a simple, sweet woman.
What was her name?
Oh, Lord, you shouldn't ask me that today.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Then you see, I'll tell you your name. Frank Brown. I believe I'm right on that. I've been trying to think about the two ways, S-T, and I said it was F-R-A-N-Z-E-I-O-N. And, but he was always called Mr. S-T. And he said it was a little study. Just as she had slowly lived to the fat woman. But she was slow, one day tall. But that was their family. And they lived. They lived there, you know. They lived there. He thought, I mean, they look out of me. Because, you know, I had too many more things to than we could have.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they met their Waterloo, too. It was like when he went broke in 1916. That was rough on everybody. That's when the bubble burst.
What caused it?
Well, just to give me a thing. Don't you know so often after a big boom is a burst? And this time really boomed. Now, my father, I will tell you his part in this. Papa went out and found the farmer. And he would go to, you see this in the sand. Papa would go to, up in the German section around Houston. Melville, I wish I could think of some of those towns. And he would tell these German farmers, it's coming down. And look at Papa Page, they're way down. You see. Come down here and look at this marvelous flower. That's where I knew it was. Now my father knew, he knew this ground, I mean, he knew farms and everything. And they bring them down here, also they may be, I don't know whether they came over here, 8 or 9 at a, you know, one time. I can remember when they first started, when Papa first started bringing them, there was no place to feed them. Because the hotel wasn't finished. Guess who fed them?
Your mama.
Mama.
Really?
Yeah. I put up summer first beer. We, you know, see, of course they were gentlemen and they were bringing us beer over from Corpus. And they liked the beer. And one time they left bottle and mama said, oh, I'll let y'all taste it. You know, and we had a lot of fun. And after they all left, we opened the bottle of beer. It was the biggest stuff I ever tasted. I know why they liked it so good. But anyway, that was a big portion of that. That farmland that there was settled by Germans. And they were people, a lot of them, they're still up there. The same people. I mean, they're probably the grandsons, but the same name. And when they got down here, they found this is about the, of course I know them too many points, but this is about the 4 miles, I would say 4 miles north and 4 or 5 miles, about 4 miles east of this. That is a German settlement. And that's what they did to Illinois when all these German families got in there. The first thing they did was they colonized. And they started to move, they got there. And they started the community. And it's still there. I mean, that community is still there. And they had their church and everything. And they had their customs that they carried on, the same customs that they had. You know, that they had been brought up there. They had their big dances out there, and in Lisa, everybody's bag is left to play and leave them dancing. And I got more in the dancing feet, but I never just took the grass and danced. Oh, I lost that boy in the dancing feet, and imagine the town where they think the same to dance.
Oh, my goodness.
Now,
this, the German community is in
Concordia,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's Concordia. And let me tell you about, this happened about, oh, it's been about 12 years ago now. About 12 years ago, I was receptionist in Dr. Taylor's office. And it was such a nice thing to do, I mean, be able to do, because I became be acquainted with so many of those people. He had so many patients from Jesus and so many of those German people that I had known as a girl. I would see some of them a part of the family or anything. And they were in a big hassle up there in Concordia. The young people had decided, you see, this church and everything was all saved, boy, they had a wonderful plan out there. The younger people decided that they needed the church to town. And I said, you know, that was, you know, I heard an awful lot of it from these people in this office, you know, talking about the mission, why they wanted to hear. I don't know. But they did it. And they have the greatest fine reason just to visit now. And it was the Concordia Lutheran Church, you see, they moved in town. But all those years they had had their church after that. That settlement. But I used to mean, you know, I told you, we settlements, they couldn't get fed. And I remember one family that came in there, they were a German family. And they moved in. And there's a place for them to stay. Still. And the name was not there. They were the Mahalas. The desire to say names, the Mahalas came in. And so Papa said, "Well, I'm sure that my wife will make a place for him." Well, we did. You know, I don't know why Mom could always put up one more. But she said, "From Papa, she said, you'll show my mother, please. I want to put the Mahalas up for about 3 or 4 days and tell her the finish up here. The finish up here for my fine, yeah." And he said, "It's nice because there are two little girls about baby face, but it's not any face, and that was just fun." And she knows Frank is just about my age, and she's still a friend. I mean, she, of course, our paths separated many, many years ago. And Lily, Lily was a little sister, she was younger than we were. And Lily couldn't speak a word of English. And we couldn't speak German. And we had a time with Lily. And they were together. But the Mahalas stayed with us for 3 or 4 days until the things came. My, I don't know, my mother was, she must have been the most patient. They understand nothing ever ruffled her. You know, just nothing up a mother. But, and all these emergencies just dried up, you know. My father said, "Well, we need to do so and so." Okay, we did it. Mom would take them over.
Uh-huh.
And I never will forget now, I won't go into this, but the reason we left this was as the S.D. Bishop went through, then we moved to the island. And Mr. Bishop had gone down there and started the land business down there. And we moved down there.
Could you tell us about that?
Well, that was in 1918. I'm getting ahead of my story because this is before the bus.
Oh, I see.
This is...
All right,
perfect. I was doing, first I was giving you a little background and how the thing was settled. And I think I've already told it on that other date.
All right.
I think I told it.
Doing
a lot of it.
The bankruptcy. The bankruptcy?
No, it's not bankruptcy. It's obviously lead up to what happened to the big bus.
Mm-hmm.
It was one day, it was the weather condition. You know,
mm-hmm.
The town had just settled so fast, I guess it had just started doing things. You know, it just beat too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden here, the elements have been so kind to everybody, it's just all of a sudden those elements stopped. And incidentally, you know, the first 2 or 3 years we lived down in Bishop, we never heard of thunder.
Oh,
God, they didn't use the thunder up there. We didn't. But anyway, all of a sudden, this was about 1950s, it dried up. It just quit raining. And I mean, it wouldn't rain. And it wouldn't rain. And if you know anything about black land, that land is got so dry, it's cracked. That, you know, it just cracked over. And people at that time, they didn't, they didn't farm with tractors and that sort of thing. They used mules and horses. And they had crops so bad up there that sometimes the farmers' horses would get a leg broken. Stepping on those crops if it got bad. Well, it got terrible, It's the wind drop. It's a very bad the wind drop. And of course, when the farmers couldn't make the crops, they couldn't get the money. They couldn't pay anybody. Nobody could pay anybody. So nobody could raise anything, sell anything. It was just a bad, bad situation. And I think it was I remember when this happened in 1960. There was a great big cotton warehouse over there on the west side of the railroad track. And they were having a series of meetings over there. I mean, church meetings. That's another thing, they used to have. We didn't have a Catholic church for many, many years. But they had a series of meetings in summertime. They called them a revival meeting. And we couldn't go to parties and do anything. I was when they started getting revived. And I told you, I just seen they stopped. Because the parties and everything stopped, when they had me to revival. No, they had these places. No, these and I had these of so we could have little after parties and things. But we out of respect to those church, although we didn't belong to the room. But often the revivals were going on, you respected him, then I hated him. I don't put him on any celebration else to do. But they were having this big meeting over there in that kind of warehouse. And it was a big, non-denominational meeting. Everybody came in. And they had an all-night prayer service. They stayed in there and they prayed and prayed. And I didn't stay all night. But they prayed for rain. I mean, they were still praying for rain. Well, we didn't get the rain right away. But we got a shoe Oscar. What a shoe Oscar is. Well, we got a storm to end all storms. That was when they had the 1960 hurricane. And we never heard of a hurricane before in our lives. And my father at that time had his office in Corpus. And he had gone over on the train to his office, and he had an office in the U.S. Hotel in Corpus. And he called my mother this day of Tennessee. It seems to me it was September the 4th, 1916. Right in there, close. Is it? Oh, yes. Yeah. No, it's in August, I think. So 2 weeks after August the 4th, it would be 4th, 12th, about August the 16th. I'm not real sure on the date on that one, on that storm. But my father called my mother, and he said, you and the children get in, but everybody get in. He said, they've got supplies up over here. There's a storm coming, a warning, storm warning, and he said, it's a tropical hurricane. And he said, I'm going to take the afternoon train and come on home. But he said, you all stay home and get everything battened down. So we went home, and my oldest brother was married, but his wife had this 2 weeks old baby. That's the reason I was worried about the baby was born on the 4th. Huh. And this was just about 2 weeks old when the storm came up. So my brother and his wife came over. And, the wind started blowing in the afternoon about 3 or 4 o'clock, It began to blow pretty hard. And I was sitting in our living room in a little wicker rocker, leaving about 5 o'clock. And that rocket started rocking. I thought, I'm not rocking that rocket. But that rocket was rocking. It was that wind rocking that rocket. And it was beginning to really shake things up. You could feel it. And it got harder and harder and harder. And about 6 o'clock, My sister and I went up on the upstairs station and looked at. And I never was going to get through with man. I guess he was going home. He had his shoes, you know, his horses. He was actually going home in the field. And his shoes just laying under that wind. It was blowing so hard. But, you know, there was no way of notifying people of a thing like this. We didn't have radios and things in those days. That man, I guess, was caught in the field when the stream came up. So we watched that. And anyway, about the, it was off the train there. Until about 6:30. Yeah, it was. They were off the train, they were happy, they were rocking and shaking. And we had a great big entrance hall in this house. Guys, it was a little living room. And we got the stairs, Mama called us upstairs, not because this was on the inside, you know. And we were sitting in this hallway. It was really kind of like a machine room in this hallway. And all of a sudden, this radio has to relation. And wham! All the way up, the well foundation. And you could hear the back end rip off. Mm-hmm. You know, it was building an L back here, and you could hear this back end rip off. And back in those days, they had plate rails in the dining room. And you hear mama sign and go, think of your joy off this wall. Think of way. And so we decided, well, we better get out of that house. And we couldn't open the door. So my brother built the window. And there was a smaller house, you know, a smaller house, there's a lot of expansion and so on, and it takes you to see stories. And there was this, our neighbors were not there, were not at home, but they had this little vibrant house next door. And so we, Mama and the rest of the family, were at the same, you know, they got a car there. And the storm, we have a lull. I don't know if you've ever been through one or not, a tropical storm, but you know, there'll be a lull. And then that thing goes. And they all got a call, but my sister and I didn't go. We got tickled. We were the last to get out the window. And the last to take off, and I don't even know why things were so funny. And the lull, when we were about halfway across, the lull stopped. And we came back. Just, and if you are just as flat on that ground as we have to be, a notice, just like a leaf, and up around this tree, we just go around this tree, but it was that strong. And from the next door thing, we went to the window, it was me, I mean, we got inside the house. Well, anyway, the storm decided that night, that's where we got. And my father never got there. And next morning, we came in on the morning train, the morning, the train that the field was, Papa got his first job in coming home, and the storm was so bad the train stopped running, and there was a, let me see, there used to be a hotel right up there, right up on the railroad track. Can't think of the name of it. A Papa and a Papa spent the night there, and the funny thing was, the second man living with a Mrs. Foster. And they spent the night just the storm out together, both of them trying to get, Mr. Frost is trying to get to the valley, I believe, and Papa trying to get the beaches to Earth, and they weathered the storm out together. I'm telling you, they said, I think it's kind of funny. 2 years later, you know, we had another storm, that was the 1990 storm, when the tidal wave hit the great standards in Corpus. And at this time, my mother was in San Antonio, in the hospital for surgery. And my father was up there with us, and see, we had news to Holland. And my father called us on the phone, and he said, "Had a big storm coming in. You all got your brother, had your brother come in, and you all stay there." And he said, "I'll get on the train and head for home." He said, "I'm coming home." Of course, my oldest brother was married, and he walked back to my sister. This was my oldest sister, and you know, we were young ladies for that time. We were able to kind of learn our own business. But he came here and stayed with us. Well, anyway, Papa started home from San Antonio. He got the rock star. Same place he was 3 years before in that storm. The train stopped running. He got home. And he did meet with Mr. Foster. Same thing the man said when we spent that storm together. And see, that train got in before the awful flood came. Also, that one when it started to start. I don't know if he would have gotten here, but wasn't that a coincidence?
Mm-hmm.
And he came here. Well, anyway, that storm, this flood storm, it wrecked me. Really, we watched it take a drill and just do the tip. We put the drill and just turned it upside down. And this warehouse they send you back,
mm-hmm.
It took the lift that warehouse. The hotel that had, we've been so bad out. We all were storm-free in the next day. We were storm-ready. And a 4x4, now you know what a 2x4 is. But a 4x4 is square.
Mm-hmm.
And it had driven, that storm had driven a 4x4 right through the east wall of that beautiful cell. Just as straight as if somebody had taken a sledgehammer and driven it through there. And the Bishop Building is on Main Street. But the two-story brick and about half of that was gone. The town was just pretty well dressed. That on top of an awful grass. And that was just the kind of the crowning blow. And after that, I guess it was only the strong that survived. And the ones that survived and weak and poor couldn't get away. And that's kind of what happened to the beautiful town of Bishop. Of course, they just started coming back. And all it was stronger and better than ever. And the farmers who were able to hold on in the beginning of about 1920, cotton went up and they started making money and things really got good again. But they had a period there of recession, never. Not as good, but it was, you might say, mainly due to the elements. And it's bigger than so. I think that they were, he was a cruiser.
Oh,
yeah. Well, you turned. I'm kind of sorry, somebody just jumped in with all their money. Yeah. I guess you say a gambler. He wasn't a gambler. He didn't gamble. But that's actually what I mean by pleasure. You know, he gambled with his wits today. So they lived very high. And Mr. Bishop got caught with his owing a lot of people. He owed my father thousands of dollars. But I don't think he ever did anything medical collection. Oh, he was never good.
Did he come back salary?
My whole father didn't work on salary.
Oh.
He worked on commission.
Oh.
You know, you sat on commission.
Yeah.
I told you that he furnished his own money. To bring these farmers down, he took their way down, but he got paid back in commission and sales, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was no salary here. So Papa made Mr. Bishop world of money. He said he was the number one salesman. Of course, Mr. Bishop was a fine salesman, didn't he? But, you know, Papa always, I don't know, he always had faith in the man. And later, when Mr. Bishop went to Harlem, he got this other land coming. My father was sitting down there. Although, maybe I thought he was getting some of his old money back when I was 6 years then. He raised some more, but he didn't. I don't think that he ever did come out. But the business by that time had moved to Dallas where he started his home.
Mm-hmm.
And their daughter Ruth, their daughter Annelle married a very wealthy young man named San Antonio. And later they moved to San Antonio, and the last I knew of Mrs. Bishop was when we had the, when Bishop celebrated his 50th anniversary. That's the only time I ever got to ride the parade in the life. And I got to ride in the front seat, I got to ride in the front car. Because it said Bishop first, and Miss Bishop was in the car with us. she came down to the Camp Racing, of course, he's quite getting way, way up in his head, studying this by the way. This bishop died many, many years before. He died in Corpus before my father did. I can remember, well, I was over, I had gone over to see my mother that afternoon, and I said, the way Papa. Oh, she said, he's over there. I said, Mr. Bishop is over there, sir, they said. And your dad's gone over to see that. And Mr. Bishop died. But he and Mr. Bishop had gotten a divorce a number of years before. And Mr. Bishop lived with the dad of Jesus, and that kind of. I think that's kind of bad to put in a place, too.
Oh, that's right.
It sounds like I'm gossiping, and I don't mean it that way at all, but you've asked me about the bishop family and what happened to him.
Yes.
But Mr. Bishop, he kept on hearing, and after the people had faith in him, because people backed him. Mm-hmm. Now, he had backers, he did not have the money. He didn't to start out with. Mm-hmm. He had to talk somebody into believing in what he did, and they financed him. And that's how the town started. He started it on borrowed money.
Did he have a lot of, education in order to talk to people, or was it something that he had himself? When he talked, did he use, how did he talk to people?
He didn't have any feeling. Well, I don't know how much feeling to speak about it. The one thing I remember about him, I guess he's quite a mathematician. And they bragged about, he could take four figures, four across.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he could just go right up there, add the four column figures.
My goodness.
So I thought it was just wonderful until I met a man who did the same thing all the time. My husband did that all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
He was known to them at school, and you know, just 15 feet. He just got 15 feet, just like that, you know, adding 4 pounds at a time.
Hmm.
But Mr. Bishop, I mean, that was very clear that they said that he could add these 4 pounds at a time. I can't add but 1 pound at a time. So, boy, I know I've got it when I got it. But anyway, I imagine his education was that he was just a farm boy. That's what you don't know. I think they were farm people, and one of his brothers lived in Bishop. He was Mr. E.A. Bishop. And it was just a very plain, ordinary person. They were plain people, I mean, very ordinary people. But Bishop was pretty pompous. You know, you're not that much person, be pompous. But, when he talked to me, he asked me, he asked him if he knew me. And he got people to be there enough that he goes around in my big automobile, and he wore my big diamonds. Both of them had these beautiful diamonds and all that thing, and in their home, and just a beautiful, I mean, just lavishly furnished, lavishly done, although it would be. Well, it wasn't anything like palace or anything like that. I mean, that was his own. But Mr. Bishop had a good thing too, for good things. And he did too. I mean, they liked those good things. And they liked to live well.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they had that. I think they used to have servants. Mm-hmm. Yes, for somebody. We used to have such as I have to. My mama keep doing good. But, well, it's fun to go over there and dig the meal. He just threw in that tray out. He just said, well, you know, of course you want to. You know what you did? I thought that was a little good kid, you know, over there, all those stars and everything. But he wasn't the. He was pretty easy to get along with. He wasn't a stars guy. And we got along with him, paid for it. But, as far as the bishop having any college education, I don't think he had more than a plain school education. I don't even know if it was a God school. I don't know his background. He's just that
Yeah, he did. He could put up a good front. You know what I mean? He made a good show. And he did it. He was a soldier from way back. He could really aspect down this battery thing, but he was always there. I think when they finally separated, I believe it was in Dallas. And when I saw Miss Bishop last, he was maybe one time going with his youth. But Miss Bishop died right there in Crawford and Robert. That was must have been back in the early 40s around in there, because my father died in 1944.
Do you have any idea why they got a divorce?
No. They didn't tell me.
We're crying, aren't we?
Yeah. You're not going to get me on some. You're not going to get me on some guy.
Oh, no.
That's
a little
too. Did you read about my mom in there? I can't tell you just a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
But along that time when we moved down here, you know, of course they were long dresses.
Mm-hmm.
They were short dresses. But skirts and blouses were very much those. And I remember the winters. At least I remember just a few months before we moved down here to South Texas, my father and my mother went to the golden wedding party, and it was an all-day affair. You know, like they have up there in town. And it was a dinner. But people were celebrating their golden wedding anniversary. And I thought my mother just looked beautiful. She was all dressed up in a set of beautiful white blouse. And she had on a black skirt that was, it was a real heavy mark was there. That was just, you know what a mark is, don't you?
Not
yet. The heavy mark is that one of the most. Next material. And that was a beautiful skirt. And then underneath this next skirt, was a beautiful costume. Yeah, and they wore, now when I was about 7 or 8, they wore 7 or 8 petticoats. Yeah, the women did. Just petticoats. But I remember this, you were asking me about clothes. I remember this dress that Mama had on. And she's just so pretty when she's all dressed. And I don't remember what the shoes were particularly. So here, what about they were button shoes.
Mm-hmm.
They were shoes from that day and time, and some of them were buttoned and some of them were lace. Lace shoes and button shoes. And they were slippers. The slippers were for the summertime, and they were the lace, the button shoes. In the summertime. And I remember this. Now this is along about that time, back around that 1910. I remember having fat leather shoes. And my shoes were white drop stitch stockings. They were lacy. And what they call it drop stitch.
Oh, I see. That's a
drop stitch stocking that made a lace pattern. And oh boy, they were pretty.
Uh-huh.
And another thing is that they wore beautiful, with these churchy blouses. My mother wore them, they wore beautiful belts. And it came down to a point. And it wasn't costume jewelry. They didn't have costume jewelry in those times. But then everybody had a beautiful dress here in their pocket. You know, they had these beautiful feelings that they wore.
Not
cameo or something? Yes, well, not just the cameos, but all kinds of beautiful dress bands that they wore. You know, on their blouses. That was their ornament. That's just the ornament that they used on their blouses. But they were very, very good at that time. And I can remember how they dressed their hair. And when we came down here, now, Mama's hair was curly. You know, it's nice and curly hair, but they pulled it back. And the women were pompadours, which they called the pompadour. And to make that pompadour, they were dressing it, you see, they had a, I can't show it on that thing. It was a mold, a little lightweight mold that was made that the woman put on their head and then still combed the hair over it. It's made it up there. And you see, the hair was combed back over the smooth. But they used it wasn't a wrap. Like they used wrap for the hair. But that was all fashioned. And they did. And we came down here, all the women were wearing their hair and talked to us. And we said to Bowser, I know my age, in life when I was a little girl, they carried these umbrellas too. They carried fancy umbrellas. And I can see these young ladies who are going down the street here, and they carry this big thing daily in their hands. And just happened to say that, Uncle. And the men looked at us, too. He really sat around and did a glimpse of an uncle. That's because they just carried this skirt in their hands, and they carried this umbrella over their head, you know. And I thought, oh, if I ever got old enough, that I could carry my skirt in my hands, and it was an umbrella I hadn't made. And by the time I got grown to wear long dresses, it was as the world, long as far as the world wants to see the galaxy. They got them to the skirt and didn't have anything to hold it up. And then it didn't get the way to get hold my skirt up.
What were the umbrellas made out of? Did you remember?
Well, they were different. They were just some of them made out of silk and some out of lace, and some of them fancy and some of them not. Some of them were special, some of them not, but they were quite an attractive, what am I trying to say?
An attractive piece to a woman?
Yes, to a woman's wardrobe, you know.
How about a hat? You meant
oh boy, they were fancy. They went all out on those. I'll tell you, in 1912, this happened. That's when the Mary Widow hat came out. I remember all this hat business and everything. They were very flowery. Usual hats back in North Texas, well, back the time that we came down here, the hats were quite fancy. And, oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, because let me tell you, there are two cars were just beginning to come in. And after we got to Bishop, you see, and we got pretty well used to an automobile, you know, coming back and forth across it. And the women, fashion was quick to catch up. But then we had a motoring coat. You know, it would be maybe made out of a silk material. But put it on, it was called a duster, and believe me, it was a duster, because that old dust really got on you if you didn't put it on. It really lived up this thing. But they think they were the dusty. Some of them were fancy and beautiful, some of them plain. And their hats were large. And with their hats, of course, that wind, you know, when just the wind keeps the dresses like it does now. But they wore this crazy long veil. Veiling was very fancy, and it would tie over the. You know, you can't get my dress. It put it over the hat and tied underneath the chin. And they wore gauntlet gloves. And it made the motoring outfit made quite a nice picture. And of course, so many of the cars you see were open. And they were all, none of myself in that. Even when the cars started, the van came from here until quite a bit later. You know, if you had guys getting to pick you up when it rained, so it looked just like you had on a little baby. Otherwise, you would just put masks in the face of the elements and let them beat you to death. I was trying to think about this. Something more about the clothing. Now, I can remember what I wore. I can remember, you know, what the... I was about... when I was nine. And I can remember what our everyday clothes were all the time. We had a lot of them, you know. They called them... Well, they had a sleeve in them. And they were thin, and they were called aprons. Mama made it. Well, every day, you know, play at home. There were little green white shirts and yellow white shirts and pink and white shirts aprons. And they buttoned down the back, two down the back, and they had a little belt across the back. And the front, you had a little collar on it, and you had two pockets. She was talking on the apron, and yeah, it was kind of a uniform for a little girl. You know, an everyday uniform, but you didn't have any funny clothes. That's what she wore. And they were easy unbuttoned and lay out of line, so she had. And,
Did you wear
that for too long? No, I wouldn't wear it for 2 years. I didn't want to wear anything for 2 years. No. Well, you couldn't send me a deer, right? But I wasn't going to do it. And you know, I was just proud of my clothes when I was a little kid. I didn't look right, I didn't like it. We wore ribbons, you know, for that dress, which was so beautiful. It was so beautiful ribbon. You know, the baby bow tied in the back, and I can remember the baby tied those bows like this. I wanted to puff them up, you know. I'd puff them up and go, then you got your hand over on your head tonight. It was very pretty. Very pretty style for children.
Yeah.
You know, they dressed it so pretty.
I still like to see children with bows in their hair.
Yes, we do. Oh, well, you know, you had a... As we grew older, you know, you had all kinds of hair ribbons, sister hair ribbons you were going. And that was a bonus invention, because two sisters, we looked apart. Boy, now you got my hair ribbons. I'd get her, and if I got her, she got me. You know, but you kept this hair in the very fast, it was rolled up, very fast, and that girl, you knew you were with them. And you had them for different dresses, different things. And it was a real pretty style. Now, they had that when I was a little girl, and my sisters and my older sisters were coming along. And I used to admire theirs. Yeah, but Mama fixed my hair flat in that bow down. I didn't like that. I'm flattened it. And what else do you want to know about style? Have I told you enough that...
How about
I forgot to tell you about the hat.
Yeah.
My brother was born in 1912, and he had this friend in North Texas, she was a nurse. And he had been with my mother when my baby sister was born in 1909, so he had no hospital or anything. Yeah, that was before the Cambridge County Hospital was built. So they contacted Mrs. Matt, and this man came down to be with my mother and stayed with her during the birth of my brother. Of course, he stayed there about 3 weeks with my mother. And you see these mothers nowadays, they have a baby one day and 2 days later, they're fine. It makes quite a difference, doesn't it? Anyway, the morning, Miss Matt came from Dallas on the train. And, we loved her. She came to nurse in our home. Her home was in Dallas. Carolina was just 40 miles from there. She had nursed Papa through the streets of pneumonia and Mama through the baby, and she had to go to Georgia. So the train got in about 6 o'clock in the morning. And I remember Papa got up. Papa, when I woke up, Papa already gone. You were going to meet Miss Matt. And I got myself dressed. You don't have that same England on, do you? You don't have that turned on.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Papa had gotten up. I mean, I got myself dressed and I took out after him. You know, it was just about a block and a half from the railroad track, and I ran down the railroad track. And that morning, I had an experience I'll never forget. They had a road crew, railroad, near London on the railroad, and they had the railroad car where they lived. Right down from there, and had a pack of dogs. Beautiful dogs. I mean, just kind dogs. And I was running down the track, you know, because of the Papa. And those dogs stood in behind me.
Hey!
Yeah, they asked me, and our Papa said, you know, some little legs fly as fast as you'd like. I mean, I got running those dogs down that railroad track. And Papa started, bunch of dogs, I said, they look like a dog. They get you running. And Papa grabbed at him. He grabbed him and started running. Killed him. He scared him off. And that's how he got me. But I mean, I've seen the head of those dogs. That was quite an experience. And that's the morning my brother was born. I mean, that was the summer my brother was born. And so Miss Mack, the train came in, and Miss Mack got off. And she was a very tall person. I would say about 5 feet 3 inches tall. And she always dressed with these. But she got off that train that morning, and she had her head turned sideways. You'll come to see that now. That now, little hallway out off the train. And she had on what you call a Mary with a hat. It was so large it wouldn't go through the wall, you know. She had to turn her head sideways to get off that train in that crazy hat. Uh-huh. Oh boy, you talk about something too. And they called him Mary with it. Uh-huh. It was a sailor hat. That thing must have been, let me see. That thing must have been over a foot across. Now you said the yard. Must have been a good yard across.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the young ladies were wearing, the summer of 1912. Were
mm-hmm.
they wearing with a hat?
Did they have flowers or what did they have?
Well, you know, those sailors, I don't remember that they were not handling it. They had some things, but they were not the heaviest gym hat that he was speaking on before. No, they were, sailor hats were not.
That's not.
They were not thin that much.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I wish we had the ribbon. I wore that sailor hat. That was, we call it the grand hat.
Oh.
The big sailor hat with the ribbon on the way down the back.
Uh-huh.
I wore them. The Bucky Band used to be a very popular comic strip. A thing used to come out of Dallas News. There was Jim, Jim, and Bucky Band. And that's the only comic we had. And we loved it. And Bucky Band, little Bucky Band shoes for boys became popular. And Bucky Band had the road strip. And I was like, I'll tell you, I was like, comic strip. I don't know if they still have, if you find those anywhere or not.
Well, they still, of course, have your Buster Brown shoes.
Yeah.
I always wondered about
that. Well, that's from that comic strip. I'm still from way, way back.
Yeah.
And what else do you want to know about clothes?
Could you tell us what were some of the jobs that women did, like the farm women? Did they? What hour did their day start, like at Bishop? Could you tell us, like, what hour they would have to get up and what some of the chores were?
I didn't live out there, thank the Lord, I don't know.
Well, all right.
You just had stock. Because the men got up and went out to feed the stock.
Uh-huh.
Milk the cows, the care of the milk that the kids could eat too. You got up and going early, that's what you did. And you hit it, you hit it hard. And there was no food in the food in those days, so they would make the different gardens and make their food. And they did that the hard way. They didn't feed them. They didn't have that way. But the farm chores were. Well, very much. I mean, there was churning to do. I know about that. I've been on the end of a churning many a time. I speak of my sister so much. But we shared that chore. We didn't. This was in our little girl in North Texas. That's a common sense out here on the back porch, this little side porch. And put the churn out there, and just outside we have a big feed of food. And we just feed, I don't know what sports it was. And Aline was churning 100 times, and I'd seen it. And I'd seen she'd churn 100 times, and I'd churn, and we'd switch to the back. And we were so afraid we were going to, we didn't enjoy the swinging, because all the time you were counting how many times you turned, you didn't want to get whipped through. Oh boy, you didn't want it. You didn't want that to be 9 years, easier or 100 in one.
Uh-huh.
But that's the way the old turning thing was.
Is that the one where you
just go and just do the, yes, you just sit there and
take it up and down.
skirt.
And did you sing, did you have little lines or songs that you would sing while you were doing this, or when you went to Bishop County?
Well, Bishop County. I never could sing even enough to sing good skirt. I have that digging voice. Yes, yeah. Honestly, we got to heat. Well, you know, we got to heat every now and then, but we always got cold. And sometimes I put soda in it.
Oh, my goodness.
I still made it come fast. Boy, that butter got there and quick. But the puff is so funny, but just showing your life. And then the butter, you know, just a little bit, put a little bit in there, let's come back. And put a little hot water in it, real quick, maybe come back. And we had our things with Sister Mama Carter. Mama Carter. Now up there, we our life was so different than Northwestern. So in Northwestern, we moved business because we didn't have the livestock and the things to do. It was like it was a farm up there, although it was right in town. Everybody else did the same way. But in business now, it's changed that way. It ain't that way. But the one that Mama used to make in Northwestern, that I remember so much, and that's one of my friends, I stole so much of it. Mama used to make hominy. Oh. Do you know what hominy is?
Yes.
Well, you know, you put it in this stuff. You put it in this big string thing. And it's a crockery.
Uh-huh.
Crockery string thing. And you put it there, I guess, if it goes through a lime process, you know, to get that outside off the corn and crack it. Then it gets to the place that it's just delicious. And that's from solar. And you know, Mama, you were just stealing. She was there. Well, there's a place in there because you stole it.